space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Dragon Upper Decks.
Yeah, we're here to look at the latest episode of Lower Decks, which is Upper Decks, and Time's Orphan, which is that rarest of DS9 things, a DS9 episode I don't particularly like, but we'll get into the reasons for that later in the show.
Just the plot inconsistencies alone, just fucking Jesus Christ. Like, what she can and can't do is just fucking astounding.
But we will get there. First of all, we have a brand new episode of Lower Decks to talk about. So yeah, this was Upper Decks, which, as the name suggests, is kind of the equivalent of the TNG episode Lower Decks. So they decide this episode we're going to show you the main command crew. And I know I'm not the first person to raise this point, but my feeling on this was, we've only got four episodes left. I don't want to spend an episode away from my main characters. I can see why they've done it, and thematically it kind of fits because TNG did Lower Decks in its final season, but they had 26 episodes to play around with. And they had 45-minute episodes. I just feel like I really didn't want to miss out on...
I honestly feel with a lot of things to do in this season, even though we're told this is it, this is the final season, that the creators are literally convinced that, no, this isn't it. So they can do these things, that there will be more Lower Decks in the future.
Maybe, and you know, as we've said over and over, I hope you're right, but we'll find out, won't we?
My feeling is, I think they're quite convinced they're going to do extra episodes, but I don't think that would affect whether or not this episode happened. I think it is like the parallels between the last series, like you say, of Next Gen and this seem too much. And it's like, also, I think it's kind of like, I think just the way all of them are talking, they want to do more Lower Decks. Like, the second they get any green light in any format to do it, I think they're all in for it, including Talyn was even, I heard an interview with her and she was really excited about the character. But I think this is assuming not. If this is how we're going out, we want one episode where we celebrate these kind of fantastic actors who, like, unlike Lower Decks, the original episode in TNG, these were people who just sort of mostly brought in for the episode or reoccurring once. These are characters we spend a bit of each week with, and they're great, and this gives them time to show. I think this is a tribute to them, and I'm like, I get the point, but it's like, I'm all for this. I really like the fact that they got their episode. It like made me really smile. I kind of felt there was a bit of me which was like, oh, this episode with the other, but I'd rather have this tribute to these guys and have all the rest of the episodes with the main cast just be killer as they have been.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I'm just like, you know, I look forward to my 25 minutes a week with with the crew. And yeah, we didn't get it this week. But, you know, in and of itself, I don't have any issue with the episode.
Question on the same point, like, is the last episode feature length? Because maybe we, like, if that is, as is tradition, maybe we get the same amount of time with the guys with this episode, like, you know, bonus
maybe without, I mean, I've not heard anything. I think we'll find out when it drops, I guess. I've not heard one way or the other.
I think the only thing I saw, which I couldn't remember to give away even if I wanted to, was the episode title, and that was it. So that's now an IMDb, if anyone cares to look.
Yeah, I saw the episode title as well, but we'll talk about that when we get there.
Yeah,
cool. Have you lost Admiral Elliot as well as he drops off your screen?
Yeah, I think he's having a bit of a lag. I don't know if he's on a wired connection in his new place yet, but
we will wait for his return. But yeah, so the episode starts out with carving pumpkins, which does, like we've speculated on, is it Movember? Is the beard to do with Movember? And this would suggest not, because this would place it at the end of October.
Yeah, the last one in October, it became full beard without moustache, so I don't have to give any money to charity. I mean, I said I will, and I will anyway, but, you know, it's like, but I don't have to. It's me choosing to. The charity didn't win over me, but, like, you know, I had a feeling it wasn't Movember motivated. And also, one thing I love about this episode is, if you look on the description on Paramount Plus on IMDb anywhere, because the only thing, the main thing that the Lower Decks crew do is carve pumpkins, the whole description is the crew carve pumpkins, so it ignores everything the other guys do, which is a lovely, that seems like such a meta in joke to me.
I think you're far more generous than I am. I have a feeling that Paramount Plus just gets an AI to write its description, and I think it looks at the first screenshot out of the episode and just writes something.
I'm offended by the idea, though, that no matter how bad an AI is as bad as Paramount Plus for doing things. Sorry, I think it would stand out as being too good if AI had written anything on Paramount Plus website.
You're right. I take it back. Paramount Plus is fantastic. So yeah,
no, it's the other way. It's the other way. They're crap. AI is better than Paramount Plus is my
The carving the pumpkins, and we've got a Cerritos, we've got a Vija that they've carved. And we find out that Mariner's been trapped in a painting, which, you know, as anyone who follows the show knows, we always do another episode alongside based on a reference. And I was scratching my head, like, which episode did they get trapped in a painting? And
the Doctor.
Yes, Doctor Who, but I can't actually think of a Star Trek episode.
I mean, it would be hilarious if one week we just picked another sci-fi because it relates so perfectly.
I think we may have to do that at some point.
Yeah, because Doctor fits perfectly. I watched it for the 61st anniversary, Doctor Who Day, on the 23rd of November. This year I watched Day of the Doctor back, and it's got them trapped in a painting. So it's like, yeah, that's the only example I could think of.
Yeah, I mean, Dark Souls, the video game, springs to mind, but that's not neither here nor there. So I feel like there should be a Star Trek episode where someone gets trapped in a painting, but if there's not, they're like missing a trick.
I feel like they're deliberately trying to reference something and we're missing whatever it is.
Yeah, maybe.
I've got his Fox a candle, but yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking Beverly would probably get involved somehow if it was, wouldn't she? But yeah, so they talk about the command crew, and they have this brilliantly sort of meta conversation where they say, well, hang on, maybe they actually do things when we're not looking at them. And it's almost like that sort of, what's that? Samuel Beckett plays it. Samuel Beckett, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, where it takes two minor characters from Hamlet and shows what they're doing while the rest of the play is happening, kind of thing. Which I suppose is, in concept, that's what the original Lower Decks episode was doing. Yeah. And we're flipping it on its head here and having, yeah, what if the command crew actually does exciting things? Then, like, no, we're the main characters. It can't be.
Yeah, it's that sort of almost over the top saying. It's like, well, if we're not here, nothing happens around here. It's like they, you know, I think appropriately for this show, it's like very over the top done. And then I love it when they go off to the bridge crew. It's like, because nothing happens around here without the bridge crew. And it's just,
yeah.
Yeah.
And we find out that, like,
in the script sometimes, and they do look a bit silly, but wonderful spoof it here.
Yeah. And we find out, like, the bridge crew have got their own little rituals. Like, we're familiar with the Lower Decks chant and everything, but and Cerritos Strong, but they've got their thing.
Let's lead it. Strong and brave, wise and true. Yeah. That's what makes Cerritos crew.
Bridge crew.
And you can see that being a T-shirt for next year's convention circuit. Or it should be. And then what we did decide to focus on for our other episode is one of the little throwaway plots is that Ensign Barnes has been turned into a cavewoman. But it's a futuristic cavewoman or something.
Yeah, it was between... because we went with Time's Off, and what was the other episode we discussed going for?
There's a reference to the next phase where they talk about Rowan Geordie.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah. In the song? Is it in the song? No, poem.
Something
poem.
Like
that. Yeah, yeah, it was in a poem, which is a slam poem kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of fun sometimes to discuss the other ones which bubbled under.
Well, whether it's fun or not, we'll touch on that when we get to that.
Oh, I can't wait. Honestly. Like, you know, there's been a couple of them, which the Enterprise ones, which I found kind of okay, whereas this one is wonderfully shit. I really enjoy. I'm so looking forward to talking about how crap it is, but we'll get there.
Oh, we'll get there. We'll get there. But in the meantime, we've got Lower Deck. This is like, I can sense your excitement to talk about a bad episode of DS9.
I really, when I'm watching it and it's average, there's nothing worse because I'm thinking, what the fuck are we into? Not only am I kind of bored, but we've got nothing to talk about here really substantively. This one, I was just like, you know, it's so much more enjoyable watching crap episodes when you know you're going to be talking about them because you think it's like, oh, I can't wait to
bring
with them. Yeah, it's great. It improves
them. Definitely.
Another gift of Retrek that we've got here.
Exactly. So, yeah, the actual stuff that's going on then, every sort of member of the bridge crew kind of gets their own little subplot in the episode. So Shax is, like, being haunted by these visions, and it's all tied into his guilt from Cardassia and...
Yeah, and don't they even... Sorry, mate.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, don't they suggest at some point near the end of the episode that it is like he says something about it's like an astral projection. So it isn't just like because up until then it could be I thought it was just him kind of seeing that, you know, it's just basically it's him literally fighting his demons. But it's like there's a suggestion there's some sort of Bajoran extra spirituality where it kind of like is really happening in some sense.
Yeah. Some sort of actual explanation for it, like Chakotay's vision quests being an actual thing.
And it's the only thing which it did make me kind of sad for, because we have discussed, like, we have had an episode where it's like, we know that Kira knew Shax. It just made me think it's like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if they had a guest spot here, or if they'd done another episode where they just had flashbacks to them during the war.
And it's that'd have been good.
Don't put something in my head that I'm not going to see, though.
Yeah, we could have had Kira and Shakar and them two mates of Kira's that turned up a few times.
You could have had
Could have brought them back. Yeah, that'd have been really good.
Like, much like they did with the Kira when they had them all... you know, Blood Oath, like when they had the three Klingons from the original series who were never on screen together, they just decided they were mates. And it's like here we know they're all mates, but there's a lot of them we haven't seen on the screen together, so you could have a mashup of all these kind of Bajorans.
And you know what? Stick Ensign Row in there while we're doing Bajorans.
Who almost was Kira. So great, perfect. Yeah,
yeah, like, exactly.
That one of the TV movies they do later.
Yes. And then Ransom has got, he's basically helping Delta Shift sort out some space cows. And, but they say, oh no, they're not cows. And this is where we get a bit more insight into Ransom. It turns out that a lot of it has all been an act and he just acts like a doofus so that it gets them to sort of unify around him. And it do, you do get some great funny moments where he's like, oh, I'm going to do my exercises, and he's doing like these weights. And then they're sort of like, oh, he must have passed out from all the training that he did.
I mean, to me, what I liked about that was that because we have seen him doing similar with Mariner, I didn't feel like, because it's almost a bit annoying when you feel like they're going, like they're, at the end, it's like, yeah, he was bluffing the whole time. Whereas I feel like
they
trusted us that we knew he was bluffing and that wasn't the reveal. Or, and you know what I mean? It wasn't set up as a reveal because it's like, then it just looks shit because you already knew. Whereas I feel like they were trusting us that we knew that and it was just a fun thing. We were seeing it from people who weren't used to them, him doing it, like, you know, like Mariner is at this stage. And I just thought it was very nice. It's just like, if anyone was tricked by it, for want of a better phrase, cool. But it's like, I don't feel like that was their main aim, which kind of, I like that they trust us with a bit. It felt respectful to the audience.
Maybe it's kind of, it's the last season, so we might as well make the subtext into the text now, you know, let's not beat around. But I don't know.
I mean, it's had wonderful character development. Yeah. Sort of like, it's almost like, I think some of it is him changing his approach and others is us discovering his approach, which he was doing the whole time. I like that there's a bit of ambiguity around that. Yeah, I think it's been lovely, his journey, I think. I'm glad.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got this moment here.
And meanwhile, Dr. Ta'ana is accused of not doing good with pain management because she doesn't do pain management. And so her thing for the whole episode is just trying to experience pain. And that's the...
Oh, it's just wonderful. Yeah, this thing's meant to be used to split atoms. I don't care. Fuck me up with it. Let's go. It's just that she is... It's the perfect character. And it's just... Yeah, it's perfectly...
She is great.
It's very silly, it's very sweary and everything, but it still managed to be Star Trek enough. Like, you know, it's my thing, like, was, I think earlier on they had to establish that line correctly, and sometimes it felt a touch on Star Trek to me. Now I think it's perfect where it's like, no other Star Trek can do it, but it's still sticking to every ethos of right across the board. And she's great.
I have noticed, though, this season they do seem to be having her just attack people a lot more. Like, she seems to have savaged someone just about every single episode this season.
And the idea that she's got, like, I think we all know that person who is kind of very disgruntled, but you've got the one person who can just say shit back to them and they get it, and their friendship, it works. It's like, you get the feeling that... I'm going to say I believe a gay guy. He was certainly very kind of like large and camp, and, you know, he seemed like that archetype of like sort of the gay best friend. I think that's what they were going for. And I just, really love that he could really sass her back. And you now get, like, in all those other episodes where she's gone nuts and she comes back and then sorts something out, like, probably she's had a conversation with him. And it's just, it's marvellous.
Yeah, it is good fun. And then Billups's plot is all about really showing what a great engineer he is. Like, we don't really see a lot of Billups usually. But this one, he's like this super mega capable engineer. And I thought that was pretty good because he's only ever been there really to be sort of the butt of a punchline. Like, I know that's true of much of the bridge crew, but I feel like everyone else, we've had a bit of them doing their job, whereas Billups, we haven't really. And it was quite fun to see him get to do that. And then you have this ridiculous idea. It's an AI defense golem.
Let me just jump in with Billups before we get into the defense golem. Just because I think it's what I really like about him is you've got all the other engineers. Usually it's like you've got your Scotty and your O'Brien, and like they're of that mold where it's like, oh, sugar, I'll get it done. Right. Okay. I'll leave 5 hours. You've got 2.5. Right. Fine. I'll get it done in that time. And they always feel very put upon. And he just gets up and it's like, oh, that's what engineers do. They have a great time doing too much work in too little time. Like, to the point whereby later on in the episode, he's always dying because it's like, he doesn't want to create another job. It's like, well, it's only meant to be used in emergency. It's like, you're about to die, dude. It's just, he's so eager, which you never usually see from the engineer because they're the put-born ones. So it's a nice kind of like
that's a good point. Yeah.
Because I love me some Engineers. Like O'Brien and Scotty are some of my favourites.
Yes, exactly. And the AI defence golem is fun. And it's, again, like you say, it's walking that line between, is it just too silly or is it very Star Trek? This idea that, no, what you've got to do is do this, but at the same time, you've got to tell it a sad story. And yes, on the face of that, it is ridiculous, but it's not a million miles away from the way they've defeated certain things in certain episodes.
No, no.
So, you know, I feel like that fits, you know.
And
I enjoyed that. And the,
how did you, like, the only thing I had a little bit of a second, not a big deal, but it was like, I was like, oh, did even Star Trek have to bring in AIs? It's like, I just like, I feel like Star Trek is such a hopeful future and there's so many fears over AIs. And like, I suppose the lesson is here that in the hands of our Star Trek future, that AI is used in service of man, not against it. But a little bit of me was can it just stick out of my Star Trek a little bit?
And it can be defeated by telling it a sad story, so that's okay.
Whereas you feel like from the experiments they've done online, like when they had that chat bot thing, which essentially early AI, when they were doing like it was like it would follow people and it would just it would make up its own answers, and within a very short period of time it turned against mankind essentially. If that had any powers at all, we would be dead right now.
Well, you know, I've had my own experience with AI over this last week. Now, every year at work around Christmas, we get set a ridiculously hard quiz. And we're allowed to use any and all tools that are available to us because it's that hard. So I may have asked the AI to see if it could solve it, and it did not have a clue.
Oh, but what's that?
The real people who I asked to help me with it did solve it eventually. So there you go. They're not going to take over just yet.
I think we're safe for the minute.
I don't think.
Yeah, we were just talking.
Yeah, I was about to say,
go on.
I don't rate AI at all at the moment. It's not where certain people say it's amazing, and then when you actually try and use things, it's not very good.
I mean, my I was just saying, it's like, it was when they brought up AI in this episode, it's like, I get it, it's through a hopeful Star Trek prism of us being, like, it being in service of mankind, but I was sort of like, almost like I didn't want AI to go into my Star Trek, because it is such a new thing at the moment.
Google have just launched Gemini, haven't they? Is their AI chatbot?
Yeah, I've had it on my phone.
Yeah, and that couldn't solve my work quiz either.
Before I lose the internet again, I got a text message. Wasn't expecting anything. I haven't seen any advertisement for Google Gemini or anything. Just Google Gemini is your new AI. Click accept to give access to everything. It's like, what the hell's bloody this? So I reported it straight away as spam to Google and blocked it.
I think that's reasonable.
And I think that's a lesson Google should learn, that you should advertise what you're going to release before you start sending messages to people, accept all this access to everything.
I would agree. But yeah, it's, I mean, Star Trek's done AI before.
Have we covered the rocks?
And it invariably turns evil. Which rocks? I don't think we have.
No, I don't.
In the briefing where they did the chant and all that, when Phelps was going through his engineering thing, he's made it canon why we get rocks fall every time they have explosions on the bridge. And it's because the consoles are made out of rocks. It's a type of rock that does something weird with electrics.
I remember that line now. Yeah.
And I just think it's brilliant that Lower Decks, after all these years, because it's one of those things when there's ever an explosion, rocks fall, and it's like, why the hell are rocks on a spaceship? and it's now canon because they're made from rocks.
I assume that was always just meant to be a bit of console, but I did like the, yeah, it's a very good explanation. It's fun.
And, yeah, we've more or less wrapped up the episode. Sorry, Elliot, while you've been having internet. It's because you're slagging off the AI, that's why. Yeah.
I didn't slag if off the AI, actually, until I got my internet back.
It's actually, if it did say Elliot was taken off this stream by Gemini. It seemed
yeah,
weird,
if you'd have let Gemini have access to everything, you'd have been fine. But yeah, the final sort of subplot of the main crew, and I thought this one was lovely, was where you get Captain Freeman reunited with her husband at the end of the episode. I thought that was just a lovely moment for her, and sort of like you were saying, Squeed, like to give these characters their due. It was just a really nice, touching moment to give her that.
I can't remember his name, but he deranged it because he mentioned it in passing, so he'd gone out of his way to make it happen.
We haven't even really mentioned that, and I thought that was brilliant. I loved her aid just all through it, just being, just that. It's the Smithers of Lower Decks, basically, just all the way through.
Yes, exactly.
Everything. Nice little nod to the administrators. Thank you. I do admin work, so, you know. But yeah, it's. I also kind of liked at the end because I sort of forgot that Mariner's dad was. Like A, an admiral, and B, kind of like was an hadn't died years ago, so it's kind of a nice little reminder. And they got to have dinner, and
she didn't get to see him when he came to visit.
Say again,
and she didn't get to see him when he'd come to visit. She thought everyone was out of her that they'd seen him.
Yes,
oh, yeah. Oh, and I saw them making up out in the turbo lift. True, is that real? No, I am having you on. It was a hilarious
joke. Yeah, that and was good. I like
an episode now. It's
great. I was going to say, I like that Talyn is getting these sort of little jokes at the end of each episode, almost like, you know, Spock used to have something he'd say at the end of the episode, and then Bones would usually.
The thing which I think is nice though is that it's because we've so often done the thing of like they're a Vulcan, but sometimes they act a bit emotional, but they don't want to be emotional and they won't admit. Like, I like the fact that it's just for something different.
Yeah,
she wants to, like, she's in favor of these kind of bringing out these sides. It's just a nice something different. I you know, we're sort of done with the Spock parallel being exactly like him. It's nice to do something different.
Yeah. So, shall we move on then to Time's Orphan, the DS9 episode?
Oh, please. I've been
which, you know what? Just start us off then, Dr. Squee. You're the one who's wanting to get stuck in. I mean, I have my thoughts on this one as well, but
can
we'll
we
let
start
you...
off not that I've been waiting for this or anything, but can we start off with Molly? Here's a little plot device to put on your arm so we can tell who you are when you're the older one later. Can we start there?
Yeah.
It's just everything in this episode is so obviously plot devices along with everything else, which doesn't make sense to what she does. In fact, I'll tee you up with a couple for the opener and then you guys could add your thoughts. So yeah, you've got that. Then they go down to the planet. And when they of course they make Keiko hate cats just in case she wasn't unlikable enough, written enough of a moaner. She was like, oh if we take the cat down it might get lost down there. She goes, well, maybe we will then. It's like, do you have to go out of your way to give us some bitchy line every time? That poor woman who, like, Rosalind Chow, great actor. I mean, there's some nice stuff to the character, but they always make her such a it's really badly written. And then they go down to the planet and the thing they go through, it's like usually they make something of like it's either known or if they find it, there's some sort of thing of like, oh, we found some ancient writing. All they do is like, yeah, it's time off. That's it.
Yes,
no further explanation. The laziest, right? That's the cold open. How do you guys on that one?
It's kind of from the same school as that weird thing in that episode where Picard and Wesley get stranded on the desert and it's never explained. It's just, there's an energy thing in this cave.
Like, This cold open could have been a lot better if you ended it with Miles reaching for Molly and you didn't see a fall. You had him reaching and then after the cold opening, or after the titles, that was the next thing where she fell. So you didn't know that that was happening. And it could have added a bit of, what do you call it?
Yeah. a bit of tension.
Bit of tension.
Tension.
But, yeah, it's like,
yeah.
In a way, I hate when you have young child actors in these things because you can tell lines seem forced. It's like,
yes.
Oh, I'm going to wear my blue jumper. I'm going to wear this. Yeah.
I'm going to do cartwheels.
Although, in all fairness,
but it's like I'm going to wear the blue thing so that she had this, so they could remember. Oh, I had the blue thing. So when older Molly comes back, she has the raggy blue thing still on.
I will say, yes. Elliot, I agree with you as a general note, but this is the one episode where I think the kid gets a pass from the shitty writing.
Oh, yeah. That's fair.
I mean, little Molly's going, it's like, I can't sell the fact this bracelet's just been blatantly put on me like this. This is so fucking obvious. Even the kid knew it. Like, they could have just had something like, they could have something like just was already on her, which was visually obvious.
And you have to say, obviously.
Oh, you know what? Maybe they could have just recognized the daughter.
And yeah, obviously,
it's crazy, but.
But this is a couple who've been apart for how long, a year? At this point when she's come back. So they're having a romantic time and they're both in as many clothes as you can possibly get away with having him while you're in bed. And it's like, Star Trek shouldn't do bed scenes because they're not good at them. When you've got a couple and they all over each other, they are not wearing as many clothes as what they possibly can.
I'm going to give you, kids are cock blockers. No, I'm sorry. I will give them that one. That one actually totally makes sense to me. They will have had to have snuck a few mints while she was at daycare to fuck, basically. Sorry, that one actually kind of makes sense. Like, it's one of the few things it does in this episode. I hate to defend it, but it's...
O'Brien saying, oh, I'm never going to send you away again. Don't worry. Like, you know, what if the war gets worse? Well, never mind about the war. You sent him away in season 3 just so she could be a botanist on Bajor because she didn't want Alt to do with her. So don't be giving us, oh, it's just because of the war, honestly. Unless O'Brien's playing the long game here. He's already had a word with Sisko. Like, look, just let her come back for a week and then you send me a report saying that the tensions are escalating. Then I'll say I'm going to resign, and then you say I can't let you resign, and that's how we'll get rid of her again. So maybe, you know, I'll maybe let that one go. But you know, they always try and present O'Brien and Keiko are so totally in love, blah blah blah. But whenever they actually show them, Keiko's just winding him up constantly and he's always getting rid of her. And I know part of that was because Rosalind Chow wasn't available all the time, so they had to minimize Keiko's appearances, so they kind of wrote around it. But what a load of rubbish.
You've literally had her as a character since episode 1, since The Emissary, who doesn't want to be on DS9.
Yeah,
made Miles' life hell. And we know is this well into season 6?
Yeah, this is towards the end, yeah.
Yeah. So we best part of 7 years in, and she still can't stand being there.
Had a few more years, because even before that, when you saw her in the Enterprise, she was just as complaining about things. Like, you know, in the first episode, she cancelled wedding. We don't really get an explanation why, and then she puts it back on. Then it acts as if Data's weird for not knowing what's going on. Like, Data's in the right there. Like, the Data's day, the first episode with her in. No, it's gone. But no, they've right from the beginning, they've made her.
It's like, as I said, Rosalind Chow is a great actress.
Brilliant.
But all the way through Next Gen and into DS9, I think she was really badly done to.
She didn't give her a lot to work with, that's all.
I think the best one is when she becomes a Power Wraith.
That was good.
That's a great episode. Power Play. Power Wraith. Sorry, that's the episode. I was saying Power Play, the original series.
Yeah. Power Play was TNG.
To Jim's point, though, I mean, they've done that with, like you were saying, about because of our availability, they were out, but it's like, they have so many characters who, like, Rom only appears every other, you know, every so many episodes. You could have just done, like, you don't need to have written her, have gone away each time, because she
You're right, they're making it.
Yeah.
And you don't have to write
them. They're making it canonical that the O'Briens. Yeah, they're making it canonical that the O'Briens do not like spending time together.
Yeah, basically, they didn't have to do that. That's the worst point.
Even though they say they do. So what happens is Molly disappears, older Molly comes out. This does lead to my favourite bit in the episode, though, where O'Brien's messing on with the machines and he goes, "Oh, bollocks!" And I love it when they slip an English swear word into an American TV show.
They used to do it in Buffy a lot, didn't they? They always had Spike constantly calling everyone a wanker. And it just flew by for however many years, no one got it. It's like, you can't say that. But what got me is that BBC Two let it go out still at 6 o'clock.
True.
I mean, Spike, I mean, because like, I felt like Spike did quite a lot of them. I think wanker, the only reason why I'm kind of thinking this is I don't think he used that too often, because I remember there was an episode of Angel where he had, but I think it was later on, only because I remember one episode where they had Wesley Wyndham Price. He got Angel to put on a pink helmet on the back of his motorbike. He goes, "Oh, just put it on and stop being such a wanker." And it's like, I don't think up to that point they'd use, and then Spike started using wanker because he'd used bollocks in the other ones. I think it was
Spike first said it in like season two, I think.
Did he? Oh, okay.
He says they had that annoying little kid, the anointed one, and he says something like, "Well, you know, he's a wanker." But anyway.
He was one of those in early Buffy. It got away with for so many years. But it's like I say, it also got away with when they showed it in England, when we do not know that he's swearing and adult swearing. Still,
like,
go on BBC Two at 6 o'clock in the evening.
You've got to remember, BBC Two back then was a bit more like, they didn't pay as much attention to it because, like, Sunday lunchtime, you'd have Fist of Fun. That's a metaphor for wank. It's just the name of the show, let alone stuff they said on it. You know, they just didn't care.
I think they didn't necessarily watch all the episodes before they aired them. Unlike Channel 4, when they showed Angel at 6 o'clock and cut it to pieces.
Yeah.
I think one of the episodes ended up being about 22 minutes long from a 44-minute show. Because they, it's like, just, did you not watch any of the screeners to see whether this is appropriate for when you're going to... Anyway, we'll save that for the Buffy and Angel podcast that we'll do in 20 years.
Can I bring up another one?
Go on.
Well, it's when they've come through and, he has his bollocks line, which is very nice. We all love that. But then you've got Kira and Dax have this bit of dialogue, which I think is just ridiculous. Because, like, I think Kira says, like, and if I know O'Brien right, he's not going to finish until he solves this thing. And Dax goes like, "Yeah, I'll bet he'll keep on this one until he solves it too." His fucking daughter, of course he will. What the fuck are you talking about? Yeah. What the fuck do you feel the need to say that? He's a great engineer. He would solve this if it was just a problem which was annoying him. And this is his daughter at stake. You idiot.
Of course,
and then
he's going to find a way to get it.
Now,
and Keiko, who will later on complain that O'Brien isn't doing enough to sort shit out, straight away she goes like, "Well, we can't take all those years away from her. She's had life." What parent, that's the first thought. Like, that's maybe later on if someone kind of comes down and go, "Look, she's
now,
had life."
Now, I wondered if this was trying to put sort of 24th century sensibilities onto somewhere. Because it did play wrong.
It's inconsistent.
Just straight away.
to her character.
Yeah, they are sort of straight away like, oh, well, we're stuck with older Molly. Let's roll with that.
We've got Cavewoman Molly now. It will deal with it. It's all right. We don't need our daughter back.
And out of the two of them, Keiko's the one who always does who always and again later on she says about doing this exact same thing and complains O'Brien's not moving quick enough. It's not particularly cool.
Now if it had been Keiko who would have fallen down the hole, O'Brien would have been like, no, it's fine. Let the bee team do it.
She's enjoying her time away. She'll have found her plant.
But Brian, why are you going to phaser the whole thing to death? Like, you don't have to destroy it. Like, where did you even get that from?
Like, give it to one of the deputies. Do you want us to give it to Nog? No, Nog's far too good. Give it to someone else. Give it to that lad that we never see. I suppose you can sort of see where Keiko's coming from there. It's like, well, you know, it's tragic that we've been separated from her, but the fact is she has grown up. We can't turn our back on our daughter. But then that kind of flies in the face of some of the stuff we get later, which is one of the other problems this episode has. But
yeah. And again, if it was someone else who was maybe more like just different thinking, it's like just everything they've established about her character always suggests she wouldn't be the one to say this. I don't think Miles would either, but she particularly, like, even more so the way she's so nagging and nagging detective seem to be the notes they give her every week when they're writing for her.
Especially, you know, this is the Star Trek universe where temporal phenomenon are a dime a dozen. You'd think that they'd go, well, hang on. Like, first of all, if she's trapped in the past, why don't we just do a slingshot round the sun, go back in time and pick her up? Why don't we use the Bajoran Orb of Time and ask to go back to that point and bring her back? You know,
I've got Wesley on speed dial to the travel zone.
We've still got that ship we picked up in Enterprise that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside.
Yeah, there's
like some kind of TV show. Can't imagine which one.
There's all sorts of ways we could go back and get Molly if we wanted to, but we always have to pretend in time travel episodes that the only way to time travel is the way that's just happened.
Yeah, that time travel has never happened before, or you're not allowed to deliberately time travel to fix time travel problems.
Which is a load of rubbish, but we have to accept it. And it'd be easier to accept it if the central drama of this episode was better, but it isn't. So that's why you can nitpick all these things. And just the B plot, which is at least a little bit funnier, is you've got Dax and Worf, and Worf's gonna babysit Hiroyoshi. But
it's fucking Worf! We know his record on rearing children.
Well, this is it. And at one point, Worf goes, I raised Alexander.
No, you fucking didn't. His grandparents, because you're incapable of raising him.
Like, Dax even goes, like, that was different. It's like, what, because he didn't?
He didn't do it. So, yeah, that was a very silly line. You'd think Michael Dorn had gone, if you watched TNG.
This isn't a good idea. Fans are going to notice our history of not being very good at raising children.
Yeah, I mean, I wish, they could have done something really nice for Worf's character and for his relationship with Alexander by having him have this moment of like,
yeah.
Well, look, I'm worried because I failed with him. I sent him away. I wasn't able to get. He would have. That was so better, Worf. Like, you could have righted so many wrongs with this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Acknowledge it.
Acknowledge. You go, look, Worf. All Worf has to do is go, I missed Alexander's early life. Due to that, we've had our problems. When he did come to me, we had our problems. I don't know and how just to deal has... with it, a baby. And instead, we have Worf going, I'm going to be great with baby because I was great with Alexander. No, you fucking weren't. Fuck off, you cunts.
And there's so many dads or parents out there generally who can relate to, they weren't equipped to be a parent when their kid was born. They have regret and they do better now and they'll never get that time back. And that could have spoken to so many things in just a few lines, basically, here. And they fucking just missed the opportunity.
No, yeah, exactly. They're trying to go for comedy wharf, but it's just, no, just silly revisionist history. But anyway.
I mean, Dawn does great with this, by the way. You know, Dawn and Farrell are both, you know, they do want to do with what they're given, as does everyone, really.
The point of it works, but it doesn't work when you actually know the history of Worf's character. If you were coming into this cold and didn't know and were just taking the dialogue at face value, then yeah, it works. The performances are fine. But yeah, it just doesn't work in the context of who Worf is. But anyway, back to the O'Briens then. So we get this thing of, like, we've got to kind of retrain Molly and see if we can get her memories back. And we get this thing with the ball and eating. And
Sorry, I've got some bits on that. First of all, so she crouches down, and they reason this is because when we last saw her, we were kind of really tall because she was a child. It's like, who, after not seeing for someone since they were a child, goes, so wait a minute, just give me a second. Oh shit, it's you. Never happened in the history of civilization. I don't care if you've been raised in a cave by yourself. You don't fucking do
that. It's very,
someone who's now a bit taller than you remember. Never.
It's very good. I mean, to be fair, I mean, we've all had that where there's kids that you haven't seen in a few years and they've shot up. And the first thing we do is we get a stepladder and we climb up it and we go, oh.
Exactly. Now I can tell who you are. I'm looking down on you.
And then they're throwing the ball. Sorry, I didn't have many notes on this episode, obviously. But then they're throwing the ball. And first of all, it's passing the teddy. And first of all, she doesn't put it down. She keeps hold of it like, you know, Keiko. It's like, Keiko, put it down for her to grab. That will relate the trust. And then later on, you can hand her stuff. Maybe. Anyway, we'll ignore that. Then they're throwing the ball. And it's like, I'm going, oh, that's quite a funny thing. I do like that. It's like, it's the fact that she's resource guarding the balls. There's at least some sort of anthropological, historical basis for that. You do resource guard.
Why is she acting like this?
But that makes sense. At least that's following some sort of science. Then O'Brien goes, I hope she does get it soon or we'll run out of balls in a minute. What? Because you'll have to go to the replicator and go, more balls, please.
More balls.
I mean, that's... They're making some sort of social commentary about men still being lazy in the 24th century. I don't know what they're going
But what gets me is, like, Molly's obviously doing something with these balls because she's keeping them in one place and she's piling them. And there's no thought of, why is she doing this? What is going on in her head psychologically? It's all just, no, you meant to pass it back to us. We don't give a shit what you're doing. We don't give a shit No, you've got to pass it back to us or you're doing it wrong. I mean, all we're interested in is pass it back.
I mean, I guess I was kind of grading on a scale with this episode because you're totally right. There should have been a moment in the episode where Julian basically explains resource guarding. That would at least I was going, it's like, okay, they haven't explained it. Maybe they're trusting the audience. That's definitely not what they're doing. It's bad writing. But maybe could excuse that one bit of the episode. Like, yeah, it's the only bit that's excusable.
But it has it, but there's nothing in the story of why it's happening and nothing of, like, and it's the way that your brains are sort of like, take no notice of what she's doing. That whatever she's doing is wrong because she's meant to pass the ball back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't like the way it approaches the problem at all because it's like, oh, she's not our daughter anymore. It's like, yes, she is. She's still your daughter and she's gone through something. And you should be trying to bond with her. And I think they are trying to show that, but the writing's so bad, it comes across like they're like, yeah, well, she's not getting it, so bollocks, we'll just send her back to the planet. And I know there's a bit more to it than that, but But the reason it's just far too easily dismissed, that, you know, because you do get that bit where, so they start taking her to the holosuite and she loves it in the holosuite, and then they take her out of it, and, bottles someone, which is pretty vicious. We've got bollocks and bottling in this episode.
But surely if you've got the situation where she needs to be in that, you don't just book half an hour that you're going to turn it off after.
No, exactly.
It was a last-minute booking.
No, but you sort of go... Because Cisco would get involved in this. No, basically, because he's done this before with Quark. He's gone, I need this, and you are going to let me have it for as long as I want it, and you will not interfere.
Yeah, they would do. They'd go, right, the O'Briens have got that holosuite 24/7.
Yeah.
I will give them this one. My feeling is, because when she says about home and then they suddenly go into the holodeck, I get the feeling it's like they're so kind of like sleep deprived, trying to deal with this, trying to fix the problem, all this, that they just go into the like holodeck. Quark goes, oh, I've got half an hour or an hour, whatever.
And
they don't ask Cisco for help. You're right. Oh, if they'd ask Cisco, I think
he would have done it. But we've also got history of O'Brien having a go at Quark. And if Quark had come in to stop it, O'Brien would have bloody nutted him. It would have just gone, okay, turn it off.
Oh, I don't think...
Because your next customers are more important than my daughter.
I think it's more okay. I think he's actually doing that for, like, he's... Again, like, it's one of the few things which I just think it's like when he doesn't want to create the scene in front of her because she's already so volatile. So, like, every time he raises a voice, like, you could imagine she would react, and you've got Klingons there. He's probably aware of the powder keg, but by trying to manage it, it fucking blows up in his face. And someone who's been on a planet and had to fend for themselves might have had to put off predators. So the knifing kind of make, like, bottling or whatever it is, makes sense.
It was just how graphic that was for an episode of Star Trek. It just really surprised me. But again, stuff like, okay, I get that they've got to turn the holodeck off, the holosuite off, but it's the way O'Brien just goes, end program. And, you know, there would have been a better way of doing that, surely. I know it's to drive them to the point where they're like, oh, this is irreconcilable. But then you get this thing of Starfleet have stepped in and said she needs to go to a special facility and you'll never be able to see her there. What? Like, excuse me? What Starfleet is this? This makes no sense. What?
Yeah, I mean, and how do they put that together so quickly? You know, it's like it's...
And O'Brien goes, oh, it'll just be a doctor raising her that we'll never see. And it's like, well, you said you were going to quit if the war got worse so you could be with Keiko, but are you not going to go live nearer to this facility so you can spend time with Molly? Oh, absolutely not, no.
The general officer is sexy, and she's dangerous. She's been tried as a violent citizen. We're not taking anything into account. The JAG officer has said,
and I'm rubbish.
I'm sorry,
it's just so
it's inconsistent of Cisco allowing it to happen. And
do you know? I see what's happened here. I see what's happened.
Go on.
It's really bad. Worf taking all the interest in Yoshi and learning to be a better parent, and perhaps even, one might extrapolate, taking on some lessons from Miles being an excellent dad. I think we'd never deny, usually he's a wonderful father. He's gone. It's like, well, Worf's listened to me. Maybe I can listen to some of the parenting techniques over the years. Abandon them and they'll be fine. Put them in a facility, whatever. It doesn't matter. Like, have you got any grandparents?
Yeah, no, you're right.
That'll do it.
We should have had a scene where O'Brien went to Worf and said, look, father to father, what would you do if this was happening? And Worf, I'd just fuck him off.
Well, is she still here? Is she still here? So you've missed what I would have done.
You've still got her? How old?
I think part of the problem maybe is that the story isn't given enough space to escalate to the point where any of this is believable. Like, it just isn't believable that, okay, there was one incident, yes, she attacked someone, but it is not believable that that would be enough for Starfleet to step in and say, no, we need to take her away, and for the fact that the O'Briens to go, well, it's the only way. You know, it isn't given enough room to breathe to get it to that point. And it's not believable that people as caring as the O'Briens would give up on their child that quickly. I just find it baffling.
The whole thing is badly written, is what it is.
Yeah.
Because these sort of episodes have been done by other shows, and I'm sure by other Star Trek episodes, or similar sort of things, time and time again. But this is just awful.
I mean, I can also add to that that the idea that Keiko at the beginning of this episode is like, we can't take those years away from her. Now they're in a position whereby you could go to a Starfleet facility. Okay, we don't love that idea. She'd be around doctors. But it would be a safe environment where they might be able to, over time, work on her behavior. That's a possibility there. Or we could send her back to the past on her own with no guarantee of living and no company. That's better. Let's do that. That will save her from the safe Starfleet facility. Thank fuck.
She was happy there. She was happy there, so she'll be fine. It's like no.
She does keep asking to go home to there.
She does. But again, it's that thing of realistically, because we've got the B-plot with Worf and Dax running, this takes place over maybe 2 days. So again, it's like she's had, 10 years of trauma, and you're going, well, we'll give it 2 days, and if it ain't fixed, fucking back through time machine.
Well, I'm sorry, but if you can't fix a problem in 2 days, that's it. There's no solution ever.
That's it.
Stepfather Worf. Stepfather Worf.
Yeah.
It is. Worf. See, this is the thing. We haven't seen all these scenes of Worf and O'Brien talking, so we know, because Worf's looking after Yoshi, that is obviously speaking to O'Briens a lot. And he's obviously talked to Miles and he's gone, I'm telling you, mate, you've had 2 days to sort this. Fuck it off. It's done with.
Absolutely.
It's done with. I had one. And I tell you what, the best thing I ever did was fuck it off to his grandparents.
Yeah.
The other possibility is, do we think...
Oh, by the way...
And I stick with this, that Worf would refer to Alexander as it.
Do you think off screen they've had a parental Freaky Friday? I think that's what's happened. Their parental style have swapped. That's it.
And then the O'Briens get home and they go, oh, well, at least we've got Hiro Yoshi. And Worf's like, no, I chucked him out the airlock because he didn't go for me gong, gong, gong thing I was trying to teach him.
Hey, he wouldn't chuck him out the airlock. He would have just given him to a nice passing couple going through the wormhole.
Fair point, he
always hands them off to someone else. Come on, he's very responsible.
But joking aside, I do find this disturbing, this idea that they just give up on a child this easily. Like, I know we're taking the piss because it's badly written, but it's not
two or three days this episode
at most.
There's maybe a bit of time that we're not seeing where O'Brien's trying to reopen the time portal, but I don't think there's a lot of time.
Yeah, there's not.
Can I jump in on what Jim was saying before about trauma and like you've given a couple of days to process 10 years worth of trauma? It's so funny that we end up with these two episodes where they show Shax and it's such a healthy representation of facing your demons. He's referred to counseling before. Like, they've given so many wonderful archetypes of a strong, proud male warrior, which is kind of in our society so often seen as kind of, you can't talk about mental health and stuff. Yeah. It's such wonderful work they've done with that character. And then you see the exact opposite with the way they deal with trauma here. It's funny because that wasn't the reason why we picked these two, but you've got the two converse ends of how to deal with trauma really well and really shittily.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to assume that this is two episodes away from the end of the season, and you've got to assume it's that thing where the writers are just absolutely strung out. This needed a couple more rewrites.
What you've got here is it's two episodes away from the end of the season. And let's bear in mind, this is the 1990s, so we have YTS in operation. And they thought, we've got the YTS in. He's been here all year. We've got to give him a bash.
I love that you've gone back to YTS. I mean, when was that last thing?
Because this is from the 1990s.
I think YTS was finished even by then. Wasn't it the job center?
They call them interns in America.
By the 1990s, it was ETS, Employment Training Scheme, but it was exactly the same thing.
I was going to say, because I remember hearing about YTS, but it stopped by the time I think I was, well, certainly cognizant.
No. When I left school, YTS was actually really big, was YTS when I left school.
Okay.
And it was well...
A lot. I have friends who left school and went straight onto ITS. So, they were earning YTS at the time was £35 a week. They earned. I was going to sixth form college. I had a part time job and I was earning £65 a week. That shows you how bad YTS was.
Yeah, and if you were,
and I was washing up in the kitchen. That's how bad YTS was.
And if you were on that youth training scheme and you did watch this episode, write this episode of DS9, we'd love to hear from you.
I thought you can say you might be, and you watch, if you were on YTS and you watch this episode, you may be entitled to compensation.
if you've watched this episode, you should be. But then it goes for the biggest cop-out ending that they get. It's, we send old Molly back. Oh, and we get original Molly back. So we've wiped that Molly from existence.
We don't see her disappear.
You do. You see old Molly disappear. Once she puts young Molly through the portal, she vanishes.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, she did.
So we kill her off in the end.
We can't take them 10 years away from her. Oh, yeah, we can. Yeah. And they're like, oh, maybe she knew she was going home as well. Shut up. You're just saying that to make yourself feel better.
In fact, even more so, it's like, we can't send her back. Yes, we can. And it's like, what was I going to say? Shit, sorry.
Do you know, I have watched this episode a number of times and I've never noticed old Molly disappear.
Yeah, she does. It's just a total cop-out.
We can't send her back. Yes, we can. And the reason why we're sending her back, because she might go to a facility in Starfleet where they look after her and give her a bit of therapy. Yeah,
but she won't like that.
No, I honestly have never noticed that old Molly disappears. I wonder if I checked
she
out
does.
By the end of this episode.
I think you did.
Easy
no,
one.
And I don't mean just once. Every time I've ever watched it.
Yeah, probably.
And then we don't get the scene from where, you know, O'Brien and Worf should have the last scene in the episode. And O'Brien should be saying, oh, and then we put her through the time portal again. And Worf's like, good, that is exactly what I would have recommended. And then Molly came back through.
Coddling.
Yeah, and it's like, and then young Molly came back through, like, oh, almost perfect. The plan nearly succeeded.
Sorry, jumped in too quickly.
it's not good.
I do like that Worf is really happy that Yoshi's first words have been what he's been teaching him, gong, gong, gong. So it's learned the Klingon ritual of eye coordination as a baby for a battler.
They should have put Worf with Molly instead of chucking a ball at her. He could have sat there and gone, gong, gong, gong. And then She might have learned Gong 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 at least. No, well, I mean, it's not
to
good.
To be fair, and maybe Worf has been sat with her and we're off screen that we haven't seen her been doing Gong 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 when your brains have been tired. And that's why she's got her hand-eye coordination in for Battler, for why she was so good at snapping straight away in her first opportunity.
Can I just want to check, because last time I go, oh my God, who wrote this? I bet they never worked in Star Trek again. And it was like one of the biggest staff writers from the original series, I think. It's like this time I've checked. It's a story by Joe Manosky. Teleplay by Bradley Thompson and David Weedle. So if they did work in Star Trek in the past this, this was not your finest work, gentlemen.
Yeah, it's not your A team, is it? Unfortunately.
It's the YTS, I'm telling you. End it, yeah. YTS needs his chance because we need to be able to sign him off that we've been teaching him. Otherwise, we won't get our big payment from government for giving him a job for nothing.
Yeah, whatever version America had of the YTS scheme, they're like, oh, we got a YTS bloke. Do you want to go and do some blow off the console over there while they write the episode? Sure, let's do it. I think that's the story of this episode and how it came to be.
YTS and there is shocking what people have to do.
Yeah.
But I don't like, I'm not going to linger on it because we've had a bit of fun with this episode. But to me, there is a disturbing sort of implication. And I don't think it's like a metaphor for children with learning difficulties or neurodivergent children or disabled children, anything necessarily like that. But I feel like the episode, the attitudes that are presented could be read that way. Like, you know, you could look at this and go, right, so they've got a kid, they're not willing to put the work in, so they get rid. And I just find that really disturbing. Yeah. And, I don't know that it was intended. I'm sure it wouldn't have been. But, yeah, it just leaves a bad taste, this episode. Fortunately, it's crap enough that we can have a laugh about it. But
I'm going to say thank fuck it was so poorly written that you couldn't draw any lessons from this. Like, if it was even slightly better written, you know, that might be a fear that you take the wrong lessons about, like, you know, difficult children and just send them away. But I just think it's so badly written, you don't even...
That doesn't necessarily jump forward,
but you've got a very good point.
It is, it's shockingly badly written.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So but hopefully...
It's like, at least it was so badly written, you couldn't take the wrong lesson from it.
Yeah, it's not worth wasting the energy on,
if
isn't
you get
it?
Any but... lesson from this, please reevaluate your life, people watching.
Yeah. Worf teaches better parenting lessons than this episode.
Worf does have better parenting, actually, in this episode, because he does teach Gong Gong Gong.
He does, really, you're right.
It's really made up by that.
And that's what we should all take from it, is Gong Gong Gong. So hopefully next week we'll find a better companion episode.
To be honest, we've always said, right from the start of Lower Decks, it pulls us onto some of these bad episodes.
It does.
That sometimes we wouldn't cover, because you wouldn't go back by choice. But, yeah, you do go back, and end of day, we have got to cover every episode eventually.
And I also add, if you're going to do a bad episode, please pull us to something as bad as this, because it was so much fun to talk about. Like, it's the medium ones which are boring. Like, this is good. This is great.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you could really let go and have a go at these ones.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I joke about the writers, but let's face it, every writer has that one episode, like every actor, like, you know, there's always stinkers that anyone does. Nothing personal.
You know, they were doing 26 episodes a season, and, you know, the water gets in at certain points. It's inevitable.
And to the drowning that was this episode.
Exactly. So yeah, we'll leave it there then, and we'll see where next week takes us. We will be back to cover the next episode of Lower Decks, as well as whatever other episode we end up covering. In the meantime, you can find us on all the socials. We're at RetrekPod on Blue Sky. We're RetrekPod@gmail.com. How's Retrek Model Studios doing, Elliot, since you sat in the model studio?
Well, obviously the painting is done. We've got the new light fittings in, and sat at the new computer desk that I built last night. I've put together the paint desk, but I've got the new top to go on it. It's getting closer and closer to being operational. I did put a shout out at the weekend that got a bit.
There we go.
Well, okay, the first video back has to be called Fully Functional. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. And Dr. Squee, what have we got going on the Dr. Squee show?
Something when I get around to it. just check out the back.
Awesome.
I haven't had any chance this week. It's just, yeah, nuts.
No worries. And thanks for trekking with us this time. And we will see you next time on the Retrek.
Thank you.
Drag off Upper Deckers.
Fascinating.